Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne. You know, if you live where you've got them, I hope you take some time to get to know your neighbors. There are all kinds of places to live and all kinds of neighbors. I grew up in a little town, and I remember walking to school or going to the store or waiting for the school bus all the time, feeling like I was somehow, covered, maybe that's the word, by the folks living around me. Protected, maybe that's the word. Embraced, maybe? Certainly, my life was colored and flavored by the folks in my neighborhood. And I still see some of them from time to time, or their kids, though I haven't lived in my old neighborhood for many, many years. Now I live in another neighborhood with new neighbors. Our first storyteller today still remembers the time when he had to interview one of his neighbors for a school assignment. His interview was with a highway patrolman, and, well, he'll tell you how that went. Here's the great storyteller Donald Davis with his childhood memory of interviewing Corporal Smith.
When I was in the eighth grade, I had my first ever male teacher, Mr. Roy Haupt. And he was a real genius. He always kept us thinking toward the future, toward the future, toward the future. I remember one time our homework for the weekend, we were eighth graders. We were supposed to go home and think about this question. If you, when you were 16 years old, could have any kind of car you wanted when you got your driver's license, what would that car be? And on Monday, we had to write that down, and we turned it in. We didn't know what he was going to do with that. But he went out and he spent all the time working this out. And he came back at the end of the week and he had sheets of paper for us. And so for whatever car we had chosen, he showed us how long it would take to get that car if we dropped out of high school and could only get a job working at McDonald's. How long would it take to get that car if we finished high school and got a job at the furniture factory? How long would it take to get that car if you went to college and became a school teacher like he was? How long would it take to get that car if you went to college and then you went to medical school and you became a doctor? And so right there in the eighth grade, it was messing with our dreams. You know, we were seeing realities of all kinds, but he was wonderful, wonderful teaching us about the realities of the future. We usually didn't have weekend homework, but one Friday he gave us an assignment. He said, it might take you all weekend to do this. He said, I want you to interview a grown-up person about their job. And then next week, it won't be written reports, we'll all give an oral report about the person you interviewed, learning all the things you learned about their job. And I thought, that is about the most boring, dumbest assignment I've ever had in my life. My daddy works at the bank. That's the most boring thing I can imagine doing in this world. Last thing I would ever want to do. My two uncles are lawyers. Oh, that's even more boring than what my daddy does. What would that do? And my mother's side of the family, they're farmers. How boring can that be? And I didn't know any adults except my relatives, so who was I going to interview? And all day Saturday passed, and I hadn't even gotten an idea about how I was going to do that assignment. Well, that afternoon, we went into town. Our whole family went into town. And as we were coming back out of town, we were coming, the speed limit in town was 20 miles an hour. And then through the residential part past our house, it was 35 miles an hour. And then just past our driveway, it went to 55 miles an hour. And as we were coming down that little straight stretch of 35 mile an hour speed limits, all of a sudden, there were two black hoses stretched across the road. And the car went kablump, kablump. And my mom said, what was that, Joe? My daddy said, oh, that's a new invention. They call it the whammy. I've heard everybody telling about it. It's what the highway patrol uses to see how fast you've been going. You see, they put those two hoses across the road, and then they're hooked together with a little machine. And when your car hits one of them, it sends a signal, and when it hits the next one, it sends another signal, and the highway patrolman right there can see you were going 42 miles an hour, or you were going 29 miles an hour. And then if you're breaking the speed limit, he can chase you and give you a ticket. And I thought, well, that's the most interesting thing I've ever heard. And as we passed the last little road on the side before we went up our driveway, hidden right up there was the highway patrol car. And I thought, I know who I'm going to go interview about their job. Being a highway patrolman, that's a lot more interesting than working at the bank. That's a lot more interesting than being a farmer. That's a lot more interesting than being a lawyer. I'm going to go do my homework assignment. Well, I got my little notebook, and I knew I could cut through our garden and around by the Leatherwoods house and kind of come down that little road without getting in the highway to get over to where I'd seen the highway patrol car. And I came around through there, and I came down on the side where the patrolman could see me so I wouldn't scare him. And he was sitting there with the window rolled down in the patrol car. It was a very nice day, with his arm on the side. And I could see from the road these two little wires coming right up there and then going up in the window of the patrol car. And I walked up and waved, and he waved back to me. And I went back up, and I said, "I'm Donald Davis." He said, "Are you Joe Davis's boy?" I said, "Yes, I am." I thought so because they live right there. He knew who I was because of where I lived. He said, "Well, my daughter is Linda K. Smith. Do you know her?" I said, "Yes, I go to school with her." Well, he was an actual father, you know, an actual human, not just highway patrolman. This is not going to be as hard as maybe I thought it was. And I explained to him, I said, "I'm in Roy Haupt's room at school." He said, "Well, Linda K. was in Roy Haupt's room last year. He's a good teacher, isn't he?" I said, "He's my favorite teacher I've just about ever had." And then I said, "Let me tell you about what my homework assignment is." And I explained to him that I needed to interview someone about their job, and would it be okay if I interviewed him about being a highway patrolman? And he said, "Well, that'll be fine with me. Get in the back seat where we could talk. Get in the back seat." He said, it's more boring than you probably think it is. A lot of it's paperwork. A lot of it is we may sit here all afternoon and nobody comes along speeding ever. We're just trying to teach people right here how to slow down as the speed limit drops, you know, on the way into town. Mostly I give them warnings and remind them they're headed into town to not go that fast. I thought, well, that does sound kind of boring. And he went on, he told me, but he had two great adventures. One of his great adventures was he was passing by a bank just as it was robbed. And the robbers were leaving in the car, and he took off chasing them right then. The call was just coming in. But they went up a little road toward the Blue Ridge Parkway there in the mountains, and as soon as they turned up that little road, he thought, "I don't even have to go fast because this is a dead-end road. They don't even know it. They are caught. But he said the road ended right over the fence from the Blue Ridge Parkway, and those rascals had stolen the car and put it on the parkway on the other side of the fence. And they got to the end of the road, jumped out, jumped the fence, got in the car and took off, and we never did catch them. I thought, well, I guess if that's your one big adventure, it is kind of boring now, isn't it? Well, he went on, he explained to me how the whammy worked, and we'd see a car go by and it would pop up to 34 miles an hour. We'd say one go by and it would be 38 miles an hour. He says, "No," he said, I don't stop them till they're going maybe 42 or something like that. And then all of a sudden, I heard the sound of a car coming fast from town, not away from town. And it came across the top of the hill by the hospital, and it had what my mother called a gutted-out muffler. And it was going, flying, and we saw it coming down the road. It was an old white Oldsmobile, but it had been hitting the door on one side, and they had replaced that door with a black door from the junkyard that had never been painted. It didn't have any hubcaps, and it was flying down the road, and when it hit that whammy and went kabump, kabump like that, it was going 62 miles an hour in a 35-mile zone, and he forgot totally that I was in the back seat of that car. It was just an instinctive reaction. Threw that wire out the window, slammed down on the gas, flipped on the siren, and here we went flying in the highway patrol car after that speeding car. About that time, he remembered I was in the back seat. He says, "Oh, my goodness, little Davis, you're not supposed to be in here. Get down, get down, get down where nobody can see you. Stay down. We got to catch him now that we've started." And here we went flying past our driveway, around the curve, past the health department. The car in front was going back and forth all over the road. He said, "It looks like he's as drunk as he can be." And he was going all over the road, off this side and off that side. We came to a big curve, and that car went off the curve into the ditch, and it was cleaning out the ditch. And then the drunk driver jerked back on the steering wheel, and it came out of the ditch, went across the road, down the bank on the other side, through a little patch of corn, and stood on its nose in the creek. And he pulled the highway patrol car over to the side, and he said, "Stay down where nobody can see you. You're not supposed to be in this car." I thought, well, you invited me. And I got over to the edge where I could look out the window about that much, because I had to see what was going on. And he got his pistol out, and he went down through that field and sort of disappeared. And then in a few minutes, he'd put his pistol away. He was coming back, and he had the drunk man. He had one hand right here on his belt and the other hand on the back of his shirt, because that guy was so drunk he couldn't walk. He was sort of carrying him back up through the field toward the car. And then behind them, about 10 steps, here came walking another person. It was this young guy who looked like he was just pale as a sheet. And his pants were wet all the way down the front. He was a hitchhiker that had been picked up by the drunk. And he'd wet his pants when they went off the road. And he was just pitiful. He was just glad he lived through all of it. Well, Corporal Smith got on back up there to the car, and he said, "Now, I've got to take him into town to the magistrate because they're going to put him in jail." He said, "Little Davis, you climb up this bank and hide in the trees up there, and I will come back and get you. Do not walk back home. If your daddy knows about this, you and I are both going to be in trouble. You just stay right there, and I'll come back and get you as soon as I can." And I went up there and got in the trees, and he took off toward town with the drunk man, and he was gone forever. And I thought, I could have walked home three times by now. But he told me, "No, don't go." And I waited and waited and waited and waited and waited. And finally, he came back and got me. And he said, "Now, you stay down. I'm going to circle around and come back up there to where you got in the car, and then you can sneak out on the other side." And he took me back, and I got out, and I headed back home. And my dad said, "Where you been?" I said, "I've been thinking about my homework." He said, "Well, what's your homework?" I said, "I'm supposed to interview an adult about their job." He said, "Well, who are you going to interview?" And I said, "Well, Daddy, I've really been thinking about this very seriously. And what I wanted to ask was, would it be okay for me to interview you?" And I sat down and I interviewed my daddy, and I wrote out the most boring interview so I could give my report next week, because I knew there were a lot of things that I just wasn't going to tell about. Thank you.
That was Donald Davis with Corporal Smith. And listening to this story reminds me of the police officers in the town where I grew up. They were just police officers in a little town, but to us, They were larger than life, especially when we were kids. I remember going with my brother to the country store on Main Street, walking down there and finding ourselves chatting with Officer Leesburg, who was parked on the curb. It was like chatting with Superman or with the mayor. I remember telling my dad about it. He just talked to us, I said, like for a long time, like we were just kind of talking. I mean, I may have been a little starstruck. A few years later, and my brother and I would have a run-in with the law. We had gone toilet papering on a late autumn night, taken some rolls of toilet paper from the pantry, and went to friends' houses late at night when everybody was asleep, throwing toilet paper streamers up into the trees, festooning the fences for people to find in the morning. And a police officer had caught us and escorted us home. The police officer was acting pretty nice, and he drove his car slowly behind us as we rode our bikes back to our house, illuminated only by his headlights. And then he woke my dad up, and he told him what had happened, and then he left. And then we got a talking to from Dad, mostly about the price of toilet paper. It's a childhood memory I've talked about right here on the show, I think. But what I haven't shared is that just a couple of years ago, I became curious as to the identity of the police officer who had ended our toilet papering spree and taken us home to Dad that night. He'd become an important figure in my memory, but I couldn't remember his name. So I started to ask around online among friends I knew had connections to the old hometown. And you know what? I found him. And when he learned that I was looking for him, he called me on the phone, Officer Brian Setzinger. And he didn't remember taking us home on that autumn night, but he remembered all sorts of stuff. And it was great to talk to him for a while about the town where I had been a kid and he had been a police officer. I loved hearing from him. And what was even more fun, though, was the search for Officer Setzinger. Old friends and family members of old friends sharing memories, mostly online, of their own experiences in the town where we were all neighbors. I even stumbled onto elementary school pals who had grown up to be police officers, and their memories opened up other memories, and soon we were swapping photos and reacquainting ourselves with those times in a way that made me feel like a kid again, surrounded by great neighbors. Though I didn't really get the urge to go toilet papering again. After all, I couldn't outrun Officer Setzinger when I was a kid and probably couldn't do it now. But I'm so grateful we kept track of each other back then. Some of that keeping track put us in pretty good stead for years and years, all of us. And that's where Donald's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along? Now, our next storyteller is Josh Goforth. He grew up in Madison County, North Carolina, in a strong community that passed along the traditional stories and music of that area to the musicians and storytellers of the next generation. And today's Josh will tell of a specific day when he was invited by a neighbor named Jimmy to join in the musical tradition of Madison County. And he'll share some of the music, too. Here's Josh.
I'd like to do a final guitar tune that I learned by going out to the jam session at Adams Pharmacy in Marshall. You know, when I was a kid growing up, we had to go to people's houses to learn this music or go to jam sessions to learn this music. And every Thursday, the pharmacist, Jerry Adams, had a jam in the back of his drugstore. Now, that's when all the people from the community who played music would get together and we'd play old tunes. Why, Elmina'd sing old country songs, and Ed, he would play the bass. And then we had Gordon Freeman, why, he would play the fiddle, him and Arthel. Oh, they could fiddle up a storm. And the pharmacist, Mr. Adams, along the walls had all these instruments. He'd have banjos and guitars, and he would let you take them down and play them. And I would ride the school bus down there after school, and I would just sit on the edge of that circle and pick up any instrument I want, like a mandolin or banjo, and I would sit at the edge of the circle, and I would watch those pickers and learn how to play by watching their hands and listening to what they would play and sing. But I was fascinated by Jimmy, because old Jimmy could play a guitar like I'd never heard. Why, Jimmy, he could just fly all over the neck of that guitar. And he always had a grin on his face, and every now and then he'd wink at me, you know, but I'd be outside the circle, so I'd kind of cower away like a little mouse. One day, after school, I rode the bus down to Adams Pharmacy, and I picked up a guitar off the wall, and Jimmy looked at me, and he took his finger and he motioned for me to come into the circle. I was being invited in for the very first time. I couldn't believe it. He even had a seat next to him that he had set up just for me. And I sat next to Jimmy. He said, "Boy," he said, "I've been watching you play that guitar." He said, you look like you're doing pretty good on that thing." He said, "Do you know the Wildwood Flyer?" I said, "Yes, sir." Because that's the first tune I'd learned. Why, I learned that from my great uncle. And that was a Mother Maybelle Carter song from the original Carter family. Why, every guitar player in the mountains knows that song. And then he asked me, he said, "Well, do you know Under the Double Eagle?" And I said, "No, I don't know that one." He said, "Why, every feller worth his salt plays a guitar I don't know Under the Double Eagle. Let me show you." And why, he put that guitar up on his knee, and he started playing Under the Double Eagle, and boy, he could just tear into that guitar, and I learned to play that tune that day. The way Mother Maybelle played it. It made it my own like this.
Josh Goforth sharing some iconic music, The Wildwood Flower, Under the Double Eagle, those great old tunes. Have you ever had an unexpected interaction with a neighbor that brought you a lasting memory? Did a neighbor ever teach you anything or give you anything you treasure now? Did you ever reach out to a neighbor in a way that blessed their life or yours? I bet you've got some stories. And if not, how about reaching out with some cookies or conversation to a neighbor to start to get to know one of those folks now? We hope you'll create stories that you can share with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on a show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. We want to thank Donald Davis and Josh Goforth for sharing their stories and tunes with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. Subscribe to the Lisa Show podcast from BYU Radio to hear host Lisa Valentine Clark and her guests share the hard-won wisdom that looks at the deeper sides of life, wherever you get your podcasts.